subsequent freedoms.
Magna Carta, a new four-part series, starts next Monday morning at 9 and then on the BBC Radio 4 website. There's a choice of listening now over on Longwave. It's time for the Daily Service, led this morning by Monsignor Tony Rogers. Here on Radio 4 FM, we begin a new book of the week. The internationally acclaimed tenor Ian Bostridge draws upon his experience as a performer and his background as a scholar to explore Franz Schubert's enigmatic masterpiece, Winter Journey, a song cycle for voice and piano, considered one of classical music's most powerful compositions.
Art song, as Americans call it, what Germans know as Lieder, can seem a niche product, even within the niche that is classical music.
Fremd bin ich eingezogen, fremd zieh ich wieder aus.
Piano-accompanied song is no longer part of everyday domestic life. It's lost its one-time primacy in the concert hall. But Winterreise, Winter Journey, a cycle of 24 songs for voice and piano, remains an indispensable work of art. The first and greatest of concept albums, which should be as much a part of our common experience as the poetry of Shakespeare, the paintings of Picasso, the novels of the Bronte sisters or Marcel Proust. It is surely remarkable that the piece lives and makes an impact in concert halls all over the world, in cultures remote from the circumstances of its origins, in Vienna of the 1820s. Winterreise was composed by Franz Schubert towards the end of his short life. He died in Vienna in 1828, aged only 31. Even in his own lifetime, Schubert was renowned as a song composer of matchless fecundity and a master of seductive melody. Yet we know that the Winter Journey discombobulated his friends. One of the closest of these, Josef von Spaun, remembered 30 years later how the songs had been received by the Schubert circle. For some time, Schubert appeared very upset and melancholy. When I asked him what was troubling him, he would only say, "Soon you will hear and understand." One day he said to me, "Come over to Schubert's today and I will sing you a cycle of horrifying songs. I'm anxious to know what you'll say about them. They've cost me more effort than any of my other songs." So he sang the entire Winter Journey through to us in a voice full of emotion. We were utterly dumbfounded by the mournful, gloomy tone of these songs, and Schober said that only one, the Linden Tree, had appealed to him. To this Schubert replied, "I like these songs more than all the rest, and you will come to like them as well." The author of the poems that make up Winter Journey, Wilhelm Müller, was in some ways the classic model of the comfortable German intellectual. He was ducal librarian at Dessau, a privy councillor, an upwardly mobile protégé of the Duke of Anhalt-Dessau. His poems appealed to Schubert for all sorts of reasons, some very personal and specific. The cycle ends, for example, with a poem about a musician. Some more general. The theme of the outcast cursed by a failed love was surely bound to appeal to a man such as Schubert, who was suffering from the early stages of syphilis. By removing the definite article from Müller's poetic cycle, Schubert made it more abstract, less definite, more open, and from our perspective, more modern. Winterreise, Winter Journey, has a starkness which is utterly true to its material in a way that Die Winterreise, The Winter Journey, would not be. Anyone can own this journey. The opening lines of the first song, Gute Nacht, Good Night. I came a stranger, I depart a stranger. May was good to me with many a garland of flowers. The girl, she talked of love, the mother even of marriage. Now the world is so gloomy, the way is shrouded in snow. Why does the man singing these songs need to get away? We don't really know, though it's often assumed that he's been rejected in love and has to move on. But it's not clear what drove him out. Did he dump her? Did she dump him? Was the mother's talk about marriage a sort of hopeful mirage, or a nightmare vision for an itinerant commitment phobe? Fremd bin ich eingezogen, we are told. A stranger I came, a stranger I departed. A fremdling is a foreigner in his own land. This was a notion with a particular resonance for people like Wilhelm Müller or Franz Schubert, living in the territories of what had been the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation, dissolved by Napoleon in 1806 and only semi-resurrected in the Restoration Settlement of 1815, which put a tight lid on expressions of German nationalism. The result was a German-speaking world under a spell a little like that which the White Witch casts in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Always winter and never Christmas. Censorship was at work. Suspicion bred disaffection. Schubert and his friends were denizens of this Biedermeier world, in which domestic pursuits were at the forefront, art forswore the heroism of yesteryear, and any opposition to the way things were was coded and discreet. Outside the Habsburg domains, German states included small principalities, such as Anhalt-Dessau, where Müller lived, free cities, and major powers, such as Prussia. Germany as a nation did not exist. To live as a German in Dessau or in Vienna in the 1820s was to live as a fremdling, a foreigner, with a sense that national borders did not coincide with linguistic realities or cultural yearnings, a sense that to be a German nationalist was to be in opposition to the established order, to be at odds with authority. It was an experience of alienation. Alienation is woven all the way through Winterreise. There is a very simple, personal sense of the word. The estrangement which follows a love affair is, after all, the way the cycle starts. But there is also the sort of alienation which makes Winterreise a pre-echo of so much 20th century philosophy and literature. Laid out in its very first word, fremd, is a connection with absurdism, existentialism, and a whole slew of other 20th century isms, with characters out of Beckett, Camus, or Paul Auster. Schubert's was an age in which, and perhaps for the first time, to be a human being could seem very lonely in a metaphysical sense. An empty universe without meaning, the first hints from a nascent geology, James Hutton had published his theory of the Earth in 1795, that Earth's history was built out of a deep time, at odds with the workings of the everyday human imagination. Nature was not friendly, not even hostile. One faced the possibility that it was simply indifferent. Schöne Welt, wo bist du? Beautiful world, where are you? Wrote Friedrich Schiller in a poem set, heartbreakingly, by Schubert in 1819, a poem which was a lament for a world emptied of meaning and significance. Schubert's Winterreise is one vessel by which this newborn, fractured, half-hearted modernity has been transmitted to its even bleaker successors. Song 3, Gefrorene Tränen, Frozen Tears.
Gefrorene Tropfen fallen von meinen Wangen ab.
Frozen drops fall from my cheeks. Has it escaped me then that I've cried? Oh, tears, my tears. And are you so lukewarm that you turn to ice like the cool morning dew? Some performances of this winter journey, and I must have sung it around 100 times, stick in the memory. This particular song, Gefrorene Tränen, brings to mind the winter of 2010, Moscow, with pianist Julius Drake, at the Pushkin Museum of Fine Arts. We arrived and left the city to the accompaniment of an unparalleled demonstration of winter's physical and aesthetic power, an ice storm which turned the trees into glassy sculptures, over-freighted with crystals, a weird landscape frozen heavy, fit for Winterreise. The very trees were weeping. How often we have performed this cycle in the summer, we thought, and how odd that sometimes seems, how inappropriate. Odd, too, perhaps, that we always give the cycle in a warm hall, that we never feel the cold or live in the silence of the snowy landscape. How often do the audience really imagine it? Should it be part of the recipe? Before the performance, a very courteous Russian journalist interviewed me for the radio. In song recitals, as opposed to opera, where a wall of light can separate the actor from the auditorium, the audience are usually visible, part of the performing equation to play with and against. Towards the end of the concert, looking into the hall, some way back, I saw my interviewer in tears, something I'd never noticed before in a performance of Winterreise. It may have meant something very particular for him. He may have had an upsetting day, week, or month. But I couldn't help ascribing it to the mythical Russian soul, that literary trope in which, for these people, the emotions lie very close to the surface. Winterreise was written in a period in which overmuch crying was becoming suspect. The mid to late 18th century, the so-called Age of Sentiment, had been awash with tears. Copious crying meant sympathy. But tears also stood in, imaginatively at least, for a more carnally imagined exchange of body fluids. The hit book of the 1770s was Goethe's The Sorrows of Young Werther. A must-read for hip young Germans on its publication, it stimulated a craze which soon spread the length and breadth of Europe. Werther had his copycats sartorially, a vogue for blue coats and buff breeches. And existentially, older and wiser heads worried that the book was encouraging not only romantic moping, Werther loves Charlotte, she is married, he pines, but even suicide, Werther's fate. Goethe pushed weeping to its ecstatic, erotic limit. Delicious tears finish off the reading of an ode which Charlotte and Werther perform together. By the 1820s, the cult of sensibility and its crying were becoming old hat. Dickens's Sam Weller, created in 1836, declares that as for feelings, it's better that a man keep 'em in his own bosom than let 'em evaporate in hot water, especially as they do no good. Tears never yet wound up a clock or worked a steam engine. It's partly a question of the whirligig of fashion, but sensibility was also one of the dangerous doctrines associated with the era of revolution. Miller's Wanderer is almost amused by, and certainly affects surprise at, his own tears. And at first sight, they are not the flowing, lubricating, intoxicating tears of sentiment, but tears which fall frozen from his cheeks. A contradiction is built into the poem, though, for while the wanderer derides his tears as being so lukewarm that they turn to ice like the morning dew, at the same time they are glowing hot as they emerge from their source, the breast. They come from within, and within is a raging furnace of emotion. The idea that crying provides some sort of possibly healthy release has a long history. At the same time, we live in a society suspicious of tears, or embarrassed by them. Men cry much less often than women in our society, and this has not always been the case. Whenever I find myself crying at a piece of music, I experience two conflicting, overlapping feelings. My satisfaction, I hesitate to call it such, at the authenticity and intensity of my response is, in its very self-consciousness, somehow shameful. One should not give way to the tears which music elicits. They come and are staunched. People in concert halls do not, unlike people at funerals, cry openly and demonstratively, despite the huge emotional impact of what they're listening to. Only that once did I catch someone, just one person, crying in the audience.
In Bostridge, reading and performing Schubert's Winter Journey, the pianist is Leif Uwe Andsnes, and the book is abridged by Lawrence Waring and produced by Kirstine Cameron.
Hello, this is Clive Anderson, and that was Christmas. And if you received a digital radio for Christmas, welcome to a whole new world of extra BBC radio stations. With a digital radio, you can still get all your favourite radio stations, including BBC Radio 4, but now you can also listen to five extra national BBC stations, including BBC Radio 4 Extra, with its wonderful classic comedy. And if you didn't get a digital radio for Christmas, well, doesn't hurt to treat yourself now and again, does it?
If you love radio, go digital. To find out more, search online for BBC Digital Radio.